Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Storm Before the Storm, The Beginning of the End of the Roman Republic by Mike Duncan, is a narrative history of Rome between 46 and 78 BC, the period after the destruction of Carthage and before the better-known age of Caesar, Pompey, and Augustus. Duncan, widely known for the History of Rome podcast, examines how the Roman Republic began to lose the political habits and institutional resilience that had sustained it for centuries. The book is not a full history of Rome or a biography of one leader. Its purpose is to explain the earlier crisis that made the later collapse possible. Duncan focuses on inequality, land conflict, elite obstruction, mass politics, military reform, civil violence, and the weakening of unwritten norms known as mos maiorum, written for general readers. The book combines accessible storytelling with a political argument about how republics can decay gradually before their formal structures finally fail. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, imperial expansion created wealth that the Republic could not absorb politically. Duncan begins from a central paradox of Roman history. The Republic was endangered not by immediate defeat, but by extraordinary success. After victories over Carthage, Macedon, and other rivals, Rome controlled immense territories and received new streams of plunder, tribute, slaves, and commercial opportunity. These gains enriched aristocratic families and equestrian business interests, but they also disrupted the older social balance on which republican politics depended. Small landholders, many of whom had served in long military campaigns, struggled to maintain farms while large estates expanded through slave labor and elite consolidation. The political system had been designed for a city-state and an Italian power, not for a Mediterranean empire with provinces, military commands, tax contracts, and overseas wealth. Duncan shows that this mismatch mattered because Roman institutions did not adapt quickly enough to the pressures created by conquest. The Senate could manage patronage and prestige, but it proved less capable of addressing structural inequality and mass dislocation. Expansion, therefore, produced both the resources of domination and the social tensions that made domestic politics more unstable. Secondly, the erosion of mos maiorum weakened rules that law alone could not enforce. One of the book's most important concepts is mos maiorum, the inherited customs and expectations that shaped Roman public life. The Republic had written laws and formal offices, but much of its stability depended on restraint, precedent, and mutual recognition among elites. Ambitious politicians were expected to compete fiercely, while still respecting limits on office holding, public violence, and procedural manipulation. Duncan argues that the crisis of the late 2nd and early 1st centuries BC was not simply a legal collapse. It was a collapse of confidence in the informal rules that made the legal system workable. Once politicians discovered that obstruction, intimidation, or appeals over the heads of the Senate could produce results, rivals had incentives to respond in kind. Each breach became easier to justify because the other side had already broken precedent. This analysis gives the book much of its contemporary resonance without requiring a direct one-to-one comparison with modern politics. Duncan's point is institutional republics depend not only on constitutions, but also on shared habits of self-limitation. Thirdly, the Gracchi exposed the danger of reform without elite consent. The careers of Tiberius and Gaius Gracchus occupy a central place in Duncan's account because they reveal how genuine social grievances could become constitutional crises. The Gracchi pushed reforms connected to land distribution, citizenship politics, grain policy, and the relationship between popular assemblies and senatorial authority. Duncan does not present them simply as heroic democrats or reckless demagogues. Instead, he treats them as political innovators operating in a system that had few safe mechanisms for large-scale reform when entrenched elites refused compromise. Tiberius Gracchus bypassed senatorial expectations, used the tribunate aggressively, and provoked aristocratic fear the traditional hierarchy was being overturned. His killing marked a decisive escalation because organized political violence entered Roman domestic politics at the center of the state. Gaius Gracchus later expanded the reform agenda and sharpened the conflict between popular mobilization and aristocratic resistance. The importance of the Gracchi in the book lies in the precedent. They set unresolved inequality, procedural escalation, and elite panic could turn policy disputes into existential struggles. Fourthly, Marius changed the military bond between soldiers, commanders, and the state. Duncan treats Gaius Marius as a figure who both responded to real military needs and unintentionally accelerated the Republic's instability. Rome faced serious threats, including the war against Jugurtha and invasions by northern peoples, such as the Cimbri and Teutones. Marius gained prestige through military success and reforms associated with recruiting poorer citizens who lacked the property qualifications traditionally linked to service. This shift helped solve manpower problems, but it also altered the relationship between soldiers and the Republic. veterans increasingly look to their commanders for land, rewards, and political advocacy, especially when the Senate failed to provide reliable settlements. Duncan emphasizes that this was not an instant creation of private armies, but it moved Rome in that direction. Military glory, popular support, and patronage became more tightly connected. Commanders with loyal troops could pressure civilian politics in ways earlier Republican norms had discouraged. Marius also demonstrated how repeated consulships and personal prestige could stretch customary limits. His career prepared the ground for later leaders who use armies as instruments of domestic power. Lastly, Sulla made civil war and dictatorship usable tools of Republican politics. The book's endpoint is the rise and death of Lucius Cornelius Sulla, whose career showed how far the Republic had moved from competitive politics toward armed domination. Sulla's conflict with Marius and his supporters culminated in the unprecedented act of marching a Roman army on Rome itself. This mattered because it shattered the assumption that legions existed to fight external enemies, not to decide political disputes inside the Republic. Duncan presents Sulla as a conservative revolutionary. He claimed to restore senatorial authority and Republican order, but he did so through civil war, proscriptions, executions, confiscations, and dictatorship. His constitutional reforms attempted to strengthen the Senate and restrict the Tribunate, yet the methods used to impose them undermined their legitimacy. Sulla also demonstrated that supreme power could be seized, reorganized, and then voluntarily relinquished, creating a dangerous model for later ambitious men. His retirement did not heal the Republic because it left behind trauma, factional hatred, and a precedent that military force could remake the state. In Duncan's framework, Sulla is the storm before Caesar. In conclusion, The Storm. Before the Storm is best suited to readers who want an accessible but serious explanation of why the Roman Republic was already fragile before Julius Caesar crossed the Rubicon. It will appeal to general history readers, students of political institutions, listeners of Duncan's podcasts, and anyone interested in how social inequality, elite rigidity, and norm-breaking can interact over time. Its practical benefit is not a simple list of modern lessons, but a disciplined historical case study in political deterioration. Readers gain a clearer understanding of why republics can remain formally intact while their operating principles are being hollowed out. Compared with many books on Rome, it stands out by concentrating on the less familiar period from the destruction of Carthage to Sulla, rather than retelling the more famous drama of Caesar and Augustus. Duncan's strength is synthesis. He makes a complex sequence of land disputes, military reforms, tribunician politics, citizenship struggles, and civil wars readable without reducing them to one cause. The book is not a specialist monograph, and readers seeking dense academic debate may want additional scholarly works. Its distinctive value lies in making the prehistory of the Republic's fall coherent, vivid, and politically intelligible for a broad audience. If you would like to support Mike Duncan, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.